Today on Rockin' the Suburbs...
Patrick, do you hear a buzzing sound?
Yeah, there is some kind of a weird sound happening right now.
I checked the cables and I don't see anything unusual.
Oh wait, Jim. I think I know where it's coming from.
What is it?
The hissing of summer lawns.
Okay, Patrick, we have a special guest.
Yes, we do.
Somebody we haven't spoken with in quite some time. It's been way too long.
Way too long.
I would say. We are talking via Skype to Tug Baker.
Yep.
Hello, Tug.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Going well.
And we're doing this for a specific reason. While we were doing all those shows in January,
mm-hmm.
in which listeners called in and talked about their favorite music of the previous year,
yep.
Tug was going a completely different direction.
I know.
Instead of listening to, you know, 100 different artists like we were doing in January, he was focused on only two in the month. He does this once a year. We'll let him explain this process he goes through.
Such a cool thing.
But it's something he does every January. And this is Rockin' the Suburbs, and I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And welcome, Tug, and tell us about how you spent your January.
Yeah, so... every year, I do a thing I call my No New Music Deep Dive January, where I don't listen to new artists, and there's really not a ton of new records that come out in January, because everybody is, like you're saying, everybody's going over their 2019 yep. artists, but I've just spent 2 months, like, furiously going over 2019 artists and lists, and I'm tired of new music, so I decide to pick some classic... or not so classic. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, at least iconic to some people, artist. And I decided to go through from start to finish and listen to them, listen to their entire discography as much as I can. So that's my plan every January. I usually, now just send out a Facebook thing to my friends and say, hey, like, here's what I do. There's this dumb thing I do every January. Mm-hmm. What's your suggestion? I always get 30 suggestions that are great at least, and I can only do a couple. And this year I really, really hindered myself because I have a 4-year-old now who is very opinionated about what music he's playing.
I bet.
And I decided to pick pretty much the only music he likes is music with action, quote unquote, which just means like metal, like 80s hair metal, or, you know, something from the Lego Movie 2. Like, that's pretty much, that's it. Like, that's all he really wants to listen to. So you know, me picking like a folk jazz artist and then a hip hop artist who, while one of the cleaner ones, is still not something I would play around him, it really, really cramped my style. Also, yeah. Two people with huge discographies that I picked. So I was, this year was probably, I wasn't able to get as deep into either of them as I would like to. And it was only two. Usually I can squeeze in three or four maybe. But this year, these two went out and I'm glad they did. But I really like, it was more of a like, all right, I got to listen to everything at least once and then like go back and focus on the stuff I really loved.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's where, yeah. So that's my January.
Before we reveal the artist this year, tell us who are some of the artists you have done in years past.
Sometimes it's been, you know, kind of necessitated by tragedy, like David Bowie, Prince. I've also done Kate Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Kate Bush was a big one.
You had P-Funk 1 year, right?
Yep,
did P-Funk 1 year. Yeah, we talked about that. Kate Bush, I think we talked about. And yeah. I think there was 1 year where I did, there's been like The Sundays, like just randomly. You know, they only have like 3 albums. Like, do The Sundays. Like, you know,
that's cool.
Like, yeah, sure. Yeah. Usually if I get to the end of the month and it's like, well, you know what? I'm kind of done with everybody. Like, I'll throw in some, you know. So yeah, like The Sundays was a good one. Yeah, I've done... lots of people. I've done, like, way back when I started, it was like Rolling Stones, Bob Dylan. I really do try and now put more of an emphasis on, I grew up listening to pretty much all the white male voices that there are.
Yep.
So, or at least people who were influenced by those white male voices. So now I do try and tend to like focus on a female voice or, you know, a person of color, you know, I try and do that just because that's the kind of things that when you're growing up, you're going to miss, and it's no fault of your own. It's just, you know, just the the way radio worked.
Circumstance. Yeah. And I will say to people, actually, all the way back, this is amazing, Jim, episode 39, we talked to Tug about this. And then episode 282 and 283, right to exactly what Tug was saying, he did, we talked about his dive into Curtis Mayfield and also Patti Smith. So that perfectly.
Yes, Curtis Mayfield. Yeah. That was a great year. God, that was probably the best year. That gave me two of my absolute favorite artists of all time.
Yeah.
Like, all of a sudden, you know, people who I'd liked before, but now just.
Great combo. So go back and find those on the Suburbs Pop website. You can go back and hear those episodes in their entirety.
It's a cool exercise because I think everybody.
So great. So smart.
Everybody has this, you know, you know of these artists. You've maybe heard a few songs, but you've never really explored their body of work. And
Most people have them at their fingertips now. They can stream most of it.
Right. That's the thing. It makes it easy. You know, now I can just go on, you know, whatever streaming service or YouTube. Even if it's not on Spotify or whatever, it's on YouTube. Somebody's got it somewhere. You know, you can go back and listen to, I did Bjork one year, who I was very well acquainted with, but I had never heard her first, you know, in Icelandic only record, she was like 12 or whatever. I'd never heard that before. Like, so really weird. I can just go into YouTube and listen to that. You know, you're not going to find a copy of that back in the day, but now the internet makes it possible.
Yeah, it would have been impossible back in the day. You walk out of the store with $400 worth of Bob Dylan albums and you're like, I got to listen to all these.
That's right.
It's a serious investment.
That's right.
Man, I hope that this gospel record's really good. It's not.
Slow train coming. I just dropped 10 bucks on it.
Okay, so who are this year's artists?
So this year's artists are Joni Mitchell and KRS-One. Mm. We'll talk. You guys want to do Joni first?
Yeah, we're going to focus on Joni Mitchell today, and then tomorrow we'll delve into KRS-One.
Okay?
Does that sound good?
Yeah. So Joni Mitchell is one that I got that I'd already had in the back of my head, and a friend of mine suggested on Facebook, and I said yes, I'm totally doing that one. It was already kind of in my head because it's a large gap in my music knowledge. I feel like I've never, you know, yes, I've heard Courtney Spark. Yes, I've heard Blue. But you know, like A Case of You is, I think, one of the best songs ever written.
Yeah.
But I've never sat down and just listened to all of them. And so I was like, yeah, let's do it. This is it. This is the time. So, I listened to Joni Mitchell all the way through. And what I found, what's cool about this is doing this is it always surprises me what I take away from each time that I do it with a different artist, because there's some that it's very easy to say, well, the first, you know, few records are going to be the best. And a lot of times that's the case. Joni Mitchell, not the case at all to me personally. And again, I'm doing a very cursory, you know, fly through of all the records and then kind of honing in on them. Well, this interested me and this interested me. And then I start kind of researching. And I mean, her whole, she's obviously a genius. But how about you guys? Where are you on your Joni Mitchell love/knowledge?
Well, I think you said it right, Tug. For me, the first album, Song of a Seagull, to me anyway, sounds pretty dated. It's a very folky album, but she hit this amazing mid-period creative mark that for a lot of people probably peaks with Blue. I mean, if people have one Joni Mitchell album, well, maybe Courtney Spark too. I don't know. Those are both really popular. But then after that, you know, she went in this much more jazzier direction when she started doing like Hissing of Summer Lawns and Mingus and Wild Things and got into the 80s and continued to make really interesting music all the way through the 90s and the 2000s as well. I mean, they weren't as frequent, but they were always different. And the ones I heard at least seemed very well thought out. But I really adore that sort of middle period. And I agree with you on A Case of You. It's literally one of the greatest. It's a perfect song. Like there's not a single note or word misplaced on that tune.
It's a great one. And I mean, so like, yeah, Blue and Courtney Spark again. Like they're great. They're wonderful. They are probably perfect albums.
Yep.
But what to me, like this dive, what I really took from it was like the weird, that weird mid-70s stuff that comes after Courtney Spark. Because I think Courtney Spark is this beautiful blend of like her going from the folk thing, which, you know, the first three albums are great. And there's some cool stuff in there. You know, there's songs where if you really start digging in, you're like, God, it's such a beautifully written song.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's a little on the slower side. She has that open tuning that kind of makes everything I wouldn't say sound the same, but it's definitely, you can immediately tell it's Joni Mitchell. But, you know, you find out, like, oh, this song's about Leonard Cohen. And there's all these, like, you know, those are cool things when you dig into it. But, and then Blue kind of perfects that, puts a period on that statement. You know, it's very much, this period is over. Now I'm going on. And Court and Spark is a good fusion of the pop and the folk and the jazz. And it's kind of perfect in that way. But then when she really leans into the jazz stuff in the later albums, that's the stuff to me that just, I think it's magical. So like my favorite thing that I came away with from this listen is Hissing of Summer Lawns. You mentioned it.
Yep.
It's so good.
Oh, it's amazing.
I love that record. It's the only, you know, after doing this whole listen, I went into my, you know, record shop and was like, do they have this? Oh, there's a copy for $8.
Yeah.
Sold. Like, I have to own this record. And reading about it more, I found out like it's one of Prince's favorite records.
Yeah.
Bjork really liked it, covered a song from it. You know, it's such a good song. And it's because it has that jazz experimentation. And then it also goes on with just what she kind of starts the, you know, the trend that I think Paul Simon would continue with Graceland and a lot of other artists would continue with in the 70s, early 80s of going to Africa for for new kind of musical styles and then incorporating them into what they were already doing. It's so good. You know, it starts off in France They Kiss on Main Street, which is a great song and very like of Court and Spark, very, you know, jazz fusion with a little pop and a little, you know, folk. And then it goes into, The Jungle Line.
The Jungle Line, yeah.
Which has like a field recording from Africa plus Moog synthesizer. Yeah.
Through huts, through Harlem, through jails and gospel pews, through the class on Park and the trash on Vine, through Europe and the deep, deep heart of Dixie Blue, through savage progress cuts the jungle line. In a low-cut blouse, she brings the beer. Rousseau paints a jungle flower behind her ear. Those cannibals of shuck and jive, they'll eat a working girl like her alive.
My son did not like it when I put on these first four Joni Mitchell records because he was like, what is going on?
Yeah.
It's all acoustic guitar. It's just a lady singing. I don't like this at all. There's no action.
Yeah.
And then it gets weird. It gets so weird with this record, and I love that about it.
Man, it's so interesting that you talked about purchasing that on vinyl because when I worked at the record store way back in the day, we had this manager there, this guy called Nick, and Hissing of Summer Lawns was in the 99-cent bin. And he said to me, Tex, he called everyone Tex. Every employee that worked there was called Tex. He said, Tex, buy this record, Tex. And it went around in my collection for years, right? And I never listened to it, but I took it with me when I moved apartments, or, you know, when we bought our house, it was still there. And then one day I said, why have I never really played this album? And I started playing it, must have been in like mid-90s, and just really, just what Tug said, you just get entranced by it. It's so great. But
it's delightful.
It really is.
It's so good. And, you know, there's so many good songs. Like, every song is good, and every song is just a pivot. Sometimes, like, within song pivots, like Harry's House / Centerpiece.
Yellow checkers for the kitchen, climbing ivy for the bed. She is lost in house and gardens. He's caught up in chief of staff. Drifts off into the memory of the way she looked in school, with her body oiled and shining at the public swimming pool.
is legitimately two songs crammed together, like her song and then Centerpiece is like a jazz standard song. And going from her song to Centerpiece, like the moment that happens is this, because she's already doing the weird kind of jazz fusion thing, and then when it switches to that jazz standard of Centerpiece, it is gorgeous. And it's beautiful, and it sounds like, you know, I think this record's on Asylum. To me, it kind of like sounds like every Tom Waits Asylum record that you'd hear, like with the lounge jazz singer, you know, but you know, it has that like swing to it, and it's all good. And then it comes back to the, like, now we're going back to the weird weird jazz and synthesizer, you know, sounds in the background. It's such a cool moment. It's a great, the whole album is terrific, but that's one of the moments that really stands out for me.
Yeah, well said. How about you, Jim? Have you listened to a lot of Joni Mitchell?
Hardly any.
Oh, so is that right? Oh, interesting.
This is very educational to me. And I'll tell you why. I mean, I know Big Yellow Taxi. I think everybody knows that song. And
I don't like that song.
And I don't really either. And I think that kind of tainted my opinion a little bit. And then also, everybody says start with Blue. Like, listen to Blue. It's a masterpiece, right? It very well may be. I'm going to say that. Mm-hmm. But it just never hit me the right way. Huh. Like, I've tried to listen to it, and maybe it's the too high of expectations. You know, when you go into something expecting it to be something, and it just doesn't do it for you. And so I just never really got into her work, but now I'm excited. I want to go listen to this album that you guys are talking about.
Totally.
That's the thing. I think that maybe Joni Mitchell is, a lot of times when I do these things, sometimes albums feel like homework, and there are definitely some of those on there. And when you talk about Blue, or you, like, they're classic. They're great. They're amazing songs on them. But like, it's the weird stuff. It's that really. Mm-hmm. Those are the things that suddenly tell me, like, this is what this artist is about.
Right.
You know, like, you know, Pay Paradise, Put Up a Parking Lot. Like, that was her, like, I'm going to make a hit record. And she did. Like, she, you know, she won Grammys. She did great. Like, but, you know, to me, it's when she gets really strange that it just comes out. And so, like, I feel like Kissing the Summer Lawns, Hajira is a great record. Mm-hmm. The opening track, Coyote, I think is raised on my, you know, best like opening track like of a record, raised up on my list of that. It's probably in the top 25 now. It's a really good one.
No regrets, Coyote. We just come from such different sets of circumstance. I'm up all night in the studios and you're up early on your ranch. You'll be brushing out a broodmare's tail while the sun is ascending, and I'll just be getting home with my reel-to-reel. There's no comprehending just how close to the bone and the skin and the eyes and the lips you can get. And still feel so alone and still feel related, like stations in some relay. You're not a hit-and-run driver, no. Racing away. You just picked up a hitcher, prisoner of the white lines on the freeway.
And I loved Mingus, and I didn't even know this existed.
It's great.
So this is 1979. It's Charles Mingus's last record.
I know.
That he requested to record with her.
Isn't that
and
crazy?
I think this is the type of thing, until you do this, like, hey, let me go back and look at this, you know, artist. You know, if you don't spend a day on Wikipedia or two, like, reading about this, you wouldn't know, like, oh, yeah, Joni Mitchell, she recorded that album with Charles Mingus, you know, unless you work in a record shop, or it's just not going to come up. But, yeah, it's his last record. He wanted to record with her, and he died during the production of it, and she finished it.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. I find it really good. I think at the time it was not very well received.
Right.
But I think it's so good, and there's so many cool little moments in it. There's The Wolf That Lives in Lindsay, which is just like this really like stripped down, like, cool song that has like just actual wolves howling in the background the entire time.
I know, it's a crazy song. Like, it really is.
It's a wild song. It's so good. And then, you know, I do think like A Chair in the Sky, like, that's an album that I really love, and I feel is this like great memorial to Charles Mingus.
Yeah.
I'll be bigger, I'll be better than ever, I'll be resurrected royal, I'll be rich as Standard Oil.
Yeah.
You know, you can really look at that as like, you know what, that's a great hat tip to an incredible jazz musician. I'm so glad. Yeah, this is why I do these things, so that I can find songs like that and albums like this that I'm like, I didn't know this existed, and it's such a cool, beautiful moment.
Yeah.
This happened, you know, before I was born. Yeah. You know, like I wasn't around for this one. It wasn't up on Pitchfork. Didn't get many
that's right.
Best album, but man, it was really good.
What did you think, Tug, of Chalk Mark in a Rainstorm?
Chalk Mark in a Rainstorm. Which one's that one?
That is the one where she did all the duets. So it's got like Willie Nelson and Petty is on there. Billy Idol is on there. And Peter Gabriel, we were just talking about Genesis the other day, but he's on there too.
I can't, God, what is the Peter Gabriel song from there? Because it's really good.
Yeah, well, My Secret Place.
For any Peter Gabriel appearance on anything.
Yeah.
That of the 80s stuff, that was my favorite.
Yeah, definitely is. It was like you were saying, she'll do something that you would never expect her to do. Like you would never expect Joni Mitchell to sing with Billy Idol and Tom Petty on the same song, you know, and it's kind of crazy. And she would do that kind of stuff, make these artistic choices that were pretty brave and not really worry about the consequences. But that's a really interesting record. You know, it's just like, hey, I've never really cut a record of duets, so let's try it. And it's
right,
pretty
and
neat.
I think she totally deserves that. I mean, you know, Sinatra did however many duets records.
Yep.
I think that if you're just talking about, you know, vocals, she's in one of the best of all time.
Yeah.
Her voice is an instrument in a way that, you know, it's just beyond most people. I think it's so good. So her getting a duets record to be like, you know what, yeah, okay, this guy and this guy, like, I think that's totally appropriate. Yeah, I don't know how the idea came up. It was this is like when she was on Geffen, so
yeah,
it felt like a lot of the Geffen stuff was a little more like, okay, like I'll go do this,
right?
I don't know.
David's not gonna say anything. He's gonna let me do it.
Right, it'll be fine. He's my friend from back in the
70s. That's right, I made him a lot of money.
Right, yeah it'll sell, you know. Yeah. I don't know, but yeah, that one to me of the 80s stuff, and good on her, because I don't think she ever shied away from, like, you know what, times are changing. And if she wasn't at the forefront of it, she was generally like, well, you know, I'm not going to just do the same thing that I've been doing
right
the entire time.
Totally true.
I think once you get to like maybe the aughts stuff, it does get to a little more like, all right, contractual, like,
yeah,
you got to get out. You know, I think Both Sides Now is like famously, I'm just doing a record of jazz standards because I don't want to write songs anymore.
Yeah.
And I don't want to. And she still, still does great.
Like, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still really good. Still a gold record.
I know. Like, you know, and still, to be able to even produce anything after all that time is kind of amazing. So totally.
It's cool. And I think there's a newish book out that she did that my buddy who suggested me wrote, and I obviously didn't have time to listen to all these records and then read that.
Sure.
But just a quick like Wikipedia glance at her history is just, it's insane.
It's pretty
like,
fascinating. Yeah.
The people that she's known and the stuff that she's done, it's very cool.
And, you know, she made a brave choice early on in her life. You know, she had a child very young and ended up deciding to have that child adopted and move on with her career. And it was many, many years before she was reunited, but she made a very difficult, I mean, obviously horrifyingly difficult decision, very young, and was married.
And one cool,
yeah, it's crazy.
One cool thing that I found out about that, like reading about this, is she kind of conflates that with, like, that is when she really got focused on songwriting.
Yep.
It was before her first album, you know, but that's when she really got focused on songwriting. That's when she really, you know, in her mind, got good at, because as she put it, she had these songs that she wanted to, she had these ideas and thoughts that she wanted to convey to someone that she could never talk to.
That's right. Yeah.
And that is what elevated her songwriting. And that's just, it's sad and it's beautiful and it's, and it makes sense.
Yeah.
In a very big way. Like, it's kind of incredible that, and this is a thing that, you know, nobody knew about her for, I think, until like the 90s.
I know. That's right. Nobody knew about it. She just internalized that entire thing. It's
right.
Kind of amazing.
And,
yeah.
Yeah. There's little stuff like that. It's just, she's just a fascinating person, a fascinating voice. And I'm really, yeah, really glad that I did this dive for, you know, to learn all these different weird, you know, and cool things, and to get in this really weird, really, all over the place 70s era. To me, that's just, you know, that's always for me going to be my favorite thing they did.
Yeah.
About this.
Great choice. Cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Doug.
Yeah. It's going to send a whole bunch of people down the Joni Mitchell rabbit hole, I have a feeling.
Yeah, please. Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is a very easy, hey, yeah, just go on. You can stream it anywhere. And also, like I said, my favorite record, you know, from this, Hissing of Summer Lawns, it was $8 in the UK.
Yeah, there you go.
Like, you can get it for cheap. Like,
you can find it.
Get it.
Yeah, you can find it.
It's worth it.
Cool. All right. So tomorrow, KRS-One.
Slightly different.
A little bit different.
A little bit different. Yeah, this is how I do. I do like to, you know, it's very hard to listen to only Joni Mitchell for a month.
Yeah.
It gets a little slow. Yeah, so we'll pick it up a little bit.
So is tomorrow more action music?
A lot of action, except action that may have words that my son can't hear. So.
Okay. All right, so you'll be with us tomorrow as well.
Yeah, we'll see you guys tomorrow.
Thanks, Tug. And
thanks, Tug.
If anyone would like to comment about Joni Mitchell, email rock@suburbspod.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram @suburbspod or call 612-440-1984. There you go. Did we mention the live show in this episode?
I think we did at the top.
Did we? Okay.
I'm not sure.
I can't remember.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well,
either.
Anyway, it's Wednesday, March 4th at Jam and Java.
Be there.
We're going to talk about The Who. Come on out. All right. And go to jamandjava.com to get tickets.
Yeah,
okay.
That's where they are.
Okay, we'll talk to you again tomorrow, Tug.
All right, see you guys tomorrow.
It's Rock in the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us was Tug Baker, and we'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
And so sweet, oh, I could drink a case of you, darling, and I would still be on my feet. Oh, I would still be on my feet.
Next year when we do this, it'll be all 80s hair bands.
There
you
go.
That'll be the only thing.
A deep dive into Aha. That's what's going to happen.
Deep dive into Poison.
There you go.
Yikes.